There we go. Okay, in a moment we're going to be turning into Revelation chapter 12, but as the slide here might suggest, we are going to be starting over in the second half of the book with essentially the same story, but I think this slide, which I just happened to find online, really best describes what's about to happen from this standpoint. The first 11 chapters, brethren, are giving us insight, as you well know now, as I understand it, symbols to be interpreted as referencing the events that would surround the eventual fall of Jerusalem in 70 AD. But they are doing so, if you will, from what Art Ogden, who is really the father, you know, and my main instructor, it's his commentary that I'm referring to for much of what you're hearing here. He who really helped me to see this much more clearly suggests that in the first 11 chapters, what you have is sort of an earthly viewpoint for these events. And now, with chapter 12 and verse 1, God is going to pull the curtain back and give us a heavenly view of what is behind the scenes. So I'll just state that tonight, and then as this night goes by in the next couple of chapters, I think you'll see what we mean by that. And clearly, there's a difference in the type of material that's being presented, and this material that we're about to enter into is more of a, let's say, a spiritual standpoint, a heavenly standpoint, seeing battles and relationships that are going on in a heavenly or spiritual realm, as opposed to the more physical kind of an approach that we saw in the first 11 chapters. Now, I really don't want to do hardly any review at all, because the two halves of the book are sufficiently different. They really don't think it's necessary for us to do that. Chapters 1 through 11, though, are all about the seven seals. Jesus is introduced in chapter 1, letters to the seven churches, chapters 2 and 3, throne room scene, chapters 4 and 5. We begin opening the first of the seven seals in chapter 6. Six of those seals are opened in that sixth chapter. And then the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th chapters all deal with the opening of the seventh seal. The interludes and pauses that take place before it, preparation for it, and then that seventh seal, when it's open, has seven parts. We have trumpeting angels. Each of the seven of the trumpeting angels is revealing, his particular portion. But remember that the first four are separated from the last three and designated, whoa, 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 as if those last three are worse. And then when we came down into chapters 10 and 11, it was very apparent that as we got to the last of the seven trumpeting angels in the seventh seal, that it was a very grand finale. The mystery of God is finished when he's about to sound. We have a conclusion that's really very dramatic, very obvious. The seven seals and whatever it is they're talking about are over. The mystery's finished. We are done. And then chapter 12 and verse 1 starts over again to tell this same story, but it also starts, if you will, farther back and with a larger scope of understanding. So we're just going to read through, as I typically do, the whole chapter, chapter 12, and then we'll go verse by verse. So let's begin. I'll be reading from the New American Standard, Revelation chapter 12 and verse 1. And a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, and the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. And she was with child, and she cried out, being in labor and in pain, to give birth. And another sign appeared in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his heads were 7 diadems. And his tail swept away a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. The dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she gave birth, he might devour her child. And she gave birth to a son, a male, who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up to God and to his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she had a place prepared by God so that there she might be nourished for 1,260 days. And there was war in heaven, Michael and his angels waging war with the dragon. And the dragon and his angels waged war, and they were not strong enough, and there was no longer a place found for them in heaven. And the great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world, and he was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. And I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren has been thrown down, who accuses them before our God day and night. And they overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb and because of the word of their testimony, and they did not love their life even to death. For this reason, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, knowing that he has only a short time. And when the dragon saw that he was thrown down to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male. And the two wings of the great eagle were given to the woman, in order that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she was nourished for a time and times and half a time from the presence of the serpent. And the serpent poured water like a river out of his mouth after the woman, so that he might cause her to be swept away with the flood. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and drank up the river which the dragon poured out of his mouth. And the dragon was enraged with the woman and went off to make war with the rest of her offspring, who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Jesus. Now you see in chapter 13 and verse 1, a different vision appears. He stood on the sand of the seashore, and I saw a beast coming up out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads, and on his horns were 10 diadems, and on his heads were blasphemous names. And then we start in, you know, to this beast. But you can see a connection in those first two verses, can't you? We're back to the same number of heads and horns and diadems. And so, chapter 12 begins with a sign that is distinguished from the others, first as great, secondly it just is, it's an awesome thing to see, and then it's going to lead to yet another beast. We're going to really be seeing, you know, these very dramatic kinds of visions now. Alright, so, obviously what's it mean? Not hearing me here, okay? So I'm showing a green light. Whatever's happening doesn't seem to be with the transmitter. There's a mute here, then it's pushed up to on. And so I wouldn't know what else to do.
Everybody here?
Does it sound like it's coming out of the speakers, or you're just hearing me?
Not
coming out of the speakers? So you're just hearing me. Okay, I just switched it off. You don't see any difference there. All right, well, can't tell you what's going on there. But it's not bothering me as much as you probably. Not to worry. You know, when I set out, I thought especially because I was producing so many more slides than I had in previous presentations, I was anxious to get the recording for the video, but that just really failed. It was too much of a problem, and this didn't work out. So if we don't get an MP3 or an audio recording tonight, I've got several others anyway, you know, through the year, so it's really not a big deal. Okay, so we're back to chapter 12, though, in verse 1. A great sign appeared in heaven. And by the way, where's John all this time? See how good you are if you could hark back now, you know, about what would be 8 weeks, I guess. What happened at the very beginning of chapter 4? In verse 1, John looks and he sees what? a door that's open where? In heaven. And then he hears a voice, and what does it say? Come up here. So where's John all this time? Well, he's up in heaven himself. Whatever the word heaven means, he was called up through the door to be there. And in chapters 4 and 5, what did he see? The throne room. He sees God himself and then Jesus in the form of the slain yet living lamb who's worthy to open the seventh seal. So John is already in heaven when he sees a sign in heaven. Now, I think you're familiar with this. I believe we've already talked about this in other contexts, and especially back in Matthew 24 it would have come up. But the word for heaven is Uranos, O-U-R-A-N-O-S. That one word is rightly and properly translated either heaven, as we would think of the throne of God and where he is and some sort of spirit realm that no human being can see, as used in that way, or it can be translated sky. Sky or heaven would be the two standard translations. In Acts chapter 1, verses 9, 10, and 11, Jesus is with his disciples, and then suddenly what happens? While he's speaking in Acts chapter 1, he goes up into the Uranos. Well, where did he go? You have to stop and think for a second. Both are true, aren't they? He went up into the sky. The disciples stood looking up. The angels asked him, why are you looking up? He's going to come back down the same way that you watched him go. That's all got to be very physically up into the sky. And then a cloud obscured him from their sight. A cloud obscured him from their sight. We'll come back to that in a little bit. When that cloud obscured him, nobody could see now with physical eyes what happens next. But we all know from various passages in the New Testament, where did Jesus go? Is he still hanging around just on the other side of that cloud? No. Where did he go? He went to heaven, we would say. And so, you know, he went to be with the Father and at the right hand, and from there he reigns. So the word goes either way. Now, in this case, since there's a great sign in heaven, we've got the sun and the moon involved, and the moon is under her feet. We've got 12 stars that are being used as a crown, but we also have this dragon that's casting a third of the stars down to the earth. Then, what's the picture that you get in your mind? As if you were in outer space and looking down so that somehow you see these events taking place. Now, I've made a big point. I'm going to continue to do so. This is the word geis everywhere that it appears here for earth. It's not oikoumene. That would refer to the Roman Empire. It's not cosmos. That would refer more appropriately to the whole planet or to the universe. It's the word geis, time and time and time again throughout this chapter and all the chapters to come. In fact, we've had it many, many times so far. But just looking in chapter 12, it appears two, four, five, six times, and this eight times in the 12th chapter. And I can see two, four, six, eight, I guess it is, in chapter 13 as well. So that word geis comes up a lot. Now, what did it look like? Was it a perspective so that John, at this point in history, he'd be the only one, was in outer space looking down at the blue marble, and we should understand it as him seeing the entire circumference, the whole globe there, and then the stars that he's talking about were all about in the entire universe? Is that the picture he has? Or is it a much more limited kind of a thing? As if perhaps we would think he was in an airplane so that he could look down and see all of Israel, and in the sky with him, same word Uranos, we have this woman and this dragon and then stars that you would see as if you were standing on the earth and looking into a night sky, which is not what you see when you're in a spaceship, are cast down, onto Israel. So he's looking more narrowly at, the eastern end of the Mediterranean. Which is it? You cannot know. It's a great sign. It's an overwhelming thing. But whatever picture you may have had in your mind, remember, the other one I just suggested is equally viable. And the verbiage here does not rule either one out, nor does it indicate one or the other. It's just, well, he saw a woman, a dragon, some stars, and the stars got cast down to the gates. Okay. Now, ultimately, we're still asking ourselves, well, all right, but what does it represent? Now, first, I've read it once, and I know, you know, tonight you've read it many times before. What is the dragon? What does the dragon represent? Two words are given. What are they? Devil and Satan. So, at case closed, right? At that point, we're not wondering anymore. We've just been told what the proper and only interpretation of that symbol is. That's Satan. So now we're going to be wondering, all right, who's the woman, who's the child, and or what do they represent, and what is Satan doing about it? So for just a second, I have only very few slides tonight. Just want you to go ahead and look up at the screen there. You know, you go out on the net, you're going to find all kinds of paintings that have been done for centuries. This one, of course, being much more recent, in which people make an attempt, you know, try to portray this. They are all terrible. I seriously thought about just not putting this video at all, because, you know, we don't know what it looked like. And so one is as good and is equally bad, you know, as another. In this case, I think he only had 8 stars to begin with, as if the cloud was obscuring some, you know, I tried to count the stars for the crown right there. But at least we have a woman with child who's standing, you know, upon the moon. I don't guess that's a very fair picture of what being clothed with the sun would look like, though, either. You know, this doesn't get to it at all. Maybe this one comes a little bit closer. At least you can count 12, you know, on the stars there, but then that's a halo rather than really a crown, you know. And I've got this last one here with the dragon coming in there. And once again, you know, clothed with the sun. How do you do that? I guess all it can mean is that the clothing, the apparel is of great intensity, very, very bright. It is just sun-like, but difficult to look at then. And so here is this woman, and she's not exactly under attack, I guess, but you have this beast, that dragon, that's waiting for her to give birth so that it might eat the child. Now, especially with these dragons, you know, brethren, and how it's going to look, we can't know. It's not necessary that you have real long necks like this. You know, it's kind of our classic dragon thing anyway. But, you know, you really could have been much more lizard-like, and even then you could get 7 heads on it and all this. You know, who knows? We cannot know. But it's not something you see any day. And then this dragon is waiting. Maybe that's the best picture, you know, for being clothed with the sun. But, you know, at least it demonstrates that the beast is waiting. Satan is waiting, and then she is given wings and flies away, goes to a place that was prepared to protect her for how long? What? How long? She's going to be in that wilderness, that's correct, for 1,260 days. Does that ring a bell? Well, we just had all that last week, didn't we? So turn back now to chapter 11. In chapter 11, there was given me a measuring rod like a staff, and someone said, "Rise and measure the temple of God and the altar and those who worship in it. Leave out the court, which is outside the temple, and do not measure it, for it has been given to the nations, and they will tread underfoot the holy city for 42 months. And I will grant authority to my 2 witnesses. They will prophesy for 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth." There's that 1,260 days. Skip down to chapter 12 to verse 6. The woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared by God so that there she might be nourished for 1,260 days. And then skipping down to verse 14, "And the 2 wings of the great eagle were given to the woman in order that she might fly into the wilderness to her place where she was nourished for a time and times and half a time from the presence of the serpent." Remember last week, we talked about this, and by the way, come over to 13:5. 13:5, there was given to him a mouth speaking arrogant words and blasphemies and authority to act for how long? 42 months. So last week I pointed out, we have four equivalent expressions, which expressions are tied together in such a manner that we're very plainly given to understand that while there are four different expressions, they mean exactly the same thing. Today, if I say 42 months, and then I ask you, how many days is that? What would you have to ask me in order to give a very precise scientific answer according to the Julian calendar that we use today? You'd have to know which months they are, wouldn't you? Because if February is one of them, then what? All right, and I was taught at a very young age, if you want to know which months have 30 days and which have 31, January on a knuckle, February, you know, on the depression behind, you know, next to it, January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November, December. Every knuckle has 31 days. Every little valley has 30, except for February, and then you just have to know. 28 or 29. I've been doing that since I was a kid. Okay? Now, if it's 42 months, which months are they? July and August are the only two that are back-to-back 31 days. All the others alternate, and then there's February. So, how many days? Well, we would say, I'm not sure, I've got to know how many months. But in the Bible, what were we just told? 42 months equals what? 1260, and that equals time times and half a time, which, by the way, is also equivalent to 3.5 years, which just happens to be, guess what? The length of time of the Roman invasion and eventual conquest of the city of Jerusalem and the destruction of its temple. It's the same length of time. So it keeps cropping up. And this isn't the only place that it does. So, run back to Daniel 7 for a minute. Come back to the 7th chapter of Daniel. And it looks like I'm going to be all right, so I'm going to go for it here. It is so difficult, brethren, to teach the book of Revelation. Because more than any other book in the entire New Testament, its quotations, references, and allusions to the Old Testament are so numerous that it's just hard to even count, way more than any other New Testament book. Tonight, I want to read the entire 7th chapter, too, before we even start looking at Revelation chapter 12. So come on over to chapter 7 of the book of Daniel, which is a long chapter, 28 and bigger than average verses, some of them. So we've got a lot of reading to do, but listen to this. Now here's Daniel. It's 553 B.C. 553 B.C. is, chapter 7, verse 1, the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. Daniel saw a dream and visions in his mind as he lay on his bed. Then he wrote the dream down and related the following summary of it. Daniel said, I was looking in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And four great beasts were coming up from the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had the wings of an eagle. I kept looking until its wings were plucked, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. A human mind also was given to it. And behold, another beast, the second one, resembling a bear. And it was raised up on one side, and 3 ribs were in its mouth between its teeth, and thus they said to it, Arise, devour much meat. After this I kept looking, and behold, another one, like a leopard, which had on its back 4 wings of a bird. The beast also had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. After this I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, a 4th beast, dreadful and terrifying, extremely strong. It had large iron teeth. It devoured and crushed and trampled down the remainder with its feet. And it was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. While I was contemplating the horns, behold, another horn, a little one, came up among them, and three of the first horns were pulled out by the roots before it. Behold, this horn possessed eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth uttering great boasts. I kept looking until thrones were set up, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His vesture was like white snow, and the hair of his head like pure wool, his throne ablaze with flames, its wheels a burning fire. A river of fire was flowing and coming out from before him. Thousands upon thousands were attending to him, and myriads upon myriads were standing before him. The court sat, and the books were opened. Then I kept looking because of the sound of the boastful words which the horn was speaking. I kept looking until the beast was slain and its body was destroyed and given to the burning fire. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but an extension of life was granted to them for an appointed period of time. I kept looking in the night visions. And behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like a son of man was coming. He came up to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. And to him was given dominion, glory, and a kingdom, that all the peoples, nations, and languages might serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which will not pass away, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed. As for me, Daniel, my spirit was distressed within me, and the visions in my mind kept alarming me. I approached one of those who were standing by and began asking him the exact meaning of all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. These great beasts, which are four kings who will rise from the earth. But the saints of the highest one will receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, for all ages to come. Then I desired to know the exact meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its claws of bronze, and which devoured, crushed, and trampled down the remainder with its feet, and the meaning of the 10 horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up, before which three fell, namely that horn which had eyes and a mouth uttering great boasts, and which was larger in appearance than its associates. I kept looking, and that horn was waging war with the saints and overpowering them, until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was passed in favor of the saints of the highest one. And the time arrived when the saints took possession of the kingdom. Thus he said, the fourth beast will be a fourth kingdom on the earth, which will be different from all the other kingdoms. And it will devour the whole earth and tread it down and crush it. As for the 10 horns, out of this kingdom, 10 kings will arise, and another will arise after them, and he will be different from the previous ones, and will subdue 3 kings. And he will speak out against the Most High, and wear down the saints of the highest one. And he will intend to make alterations in times and in law, and they will be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time. But the court will sit, and his dominion will be taken away, annihilated, and destroyed forever. Then the sovereignty, the dominion, and the greatness of all the kingdoms under the whole heaven will be given to the people of the saints of the highest one. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all the dominions will serve and obey him. At this point, the revelation ended. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts were greatly alarming me, and my face grew pale, but I kept the matter to myself. A lot of reading tonight. Not done yet. Okay. But doesn't that just make your eyes get really wide? Whoa. There's just a lot of stuff in there that sounds pretty familiar. It sounds pretty much like Revelation even, doesn't it? A lot of stuff in there that sounds very, very familiar. Now then, let's skip on over to chapter 12. Chapter 12, I also would like to read in its entirety. We can do three chapters tonight without interruption. Here's how Daniel ends his prophecy. Now, at that time, Michael, the great prince who stands guard over the sons of your people, will arise. And there will be a time of distress, such as has never occurred since there was a nation until that time. And at that time, your people, everyone who is found written in the book, will be rescued. And many of those, please note it's not all, many of those who sleep in the dust of the ground will awake, these to everlasting life, but the others to disgrace and everlasting contempt. And those who have insight will shine brightly like the brightness of the expanse of heaven, and those who lead the many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. But as for you, Daniel, conceal these words and seal up the book until, and brethren, I have great disagreement with the translation of the New American Standard here. I do not believe this says end of time at all. It says time of the end, and that is a very dramatic difference, I know. You can do your own research on that. I do not believe this has been properly translated as end of time. It is time of the end, is the way it should have been translated. And I'll read it that way in verse 4. But as for you, Daniel, conceal these words and seal up the book until the time of the end. Many will go back and forth, and knowledge will increase. Then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, two others were standing, one on this bank of the river and the other on that bank of the river. And the one said to the man dressed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, how long until the end of these wonders? And I heard the man dressed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, as he raised his right hand and his left toward heaven, and swore by him who lives forever and ever that it would be for a time, and times, and half a time. And as soon as they finish shattering the power of the holy people, all these events will be completed. As for me, I heard but could not understand. So I said, my Lord, what will be the outcome of these events? And he said, go, Daniel, for these words are concealed and sealed up until the end time, which is a much better translation there. That's just fine. That, again, is the idea of the time of the end time. Not the end of time, but the end time, the end that's become very familiar to us, I think, from Matthew 24 and elsewhere. But he says in verse 9, go your way, Daniel. These words are concealed and sealed up until the end time. Many will be purged, purified, and refined, but the wicked will act wickedly, and none of the wicked will understand, but those who have insight will understand. And from the time that the regular sacrifice is abolished and the abomination of desolation is set up, there will be 1,230 days more than what we found in Revelation. How blessed is he who keeps waiting and attains to the 1,335 days. But as for you, go your way to the end. Then you will enter into rest and rise again for your allotted portion at the end of the days. Please note verse 13. That first end is when Daniel dies. The second end is not the word age. It is the word days, as your marginal reference will tell you. Where in my Bible it says, literally, days. That's what it said. Days, not age. But, again, do you note, brethren, these overlapping concepts and ideas? Wow! And do you note that when, in Matthew 24, Jesus said, the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet in verse 15. Okay? That's verse 15 of Matthew 24. What did Jesus say in verse 34 of Matthew 24? All these things will take place in this generation, the one he was talking to. Now, I said two chapter readings back, it's really hard to teach Revelation. A lot of teachers approach it first by teaching all of Ezekiel and then all of Daniel and then come to Revelation. Obviously, I've not chosen to do it that way. What I've chosen to do is to say, look, here's Revelation. Now, there are many allusions, that's A-L-L-U-S-I-O-N-S, references back to Old Testament books aplenty. And then, here's Daniel. Wow! The connections here, brethren, I think, are inseparable. The abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet was going to come during the generation Jesus was speaking to in Matthew 24. Then, about 35 years later, the book of Revelation is written. We are told in the beginning and the end that these events are soon to take place. We've seen seven seals open. The last one, the mystery of God, is finished as he preached to his prophets. That has to do with the Gentiles coming into the kingdom, which means that all the kingdoms of the earth have become the kingdom of our God and not just the one of the Jews. And then we've got our time and half a times, our 1260 days. We've just got reference after reference after reference in Revelation and Daniel that are tying all of these events together, brethren, to the very same generation. I think absolutely so. So in Revelation chapter 12, where these same things come up again, okay, I think maybe we just might be talking about events that were shortly to come to pass if we're unfolding. Only now in chapter 12, we've stepped all the way back to view this thing from a heavenly perspective and see the battle that's going on in heaven in the spiritual realm that is directly related to what's happening down there on the earth in that generation that Jesus said these events would see, or these people receiving these books would see. So come back now to Revelation chapter 12. I can't go teach all of Daniel. My sense of it is this. If I were to teach Ezekiel and then Daniel and then Matthew and then Revelation, it would take about 2 years. By the time I get to Revelation, what do you remember from 2 years ago back in all these other books? What if it was even only 6 months ago? You'd have lost a lot of it. And for that matter, in light of what I preached on Sunday morning, in 6 months this congregation might have seen a lot of turnover. And we'd have a whole bunch of new people. Hi, Jason. Poor guy walking in the middle of Revelation. We should send him back where he came from, tell him he can't go, until we start Revelation the next time. See, when you got that turnover like that, I don't think it serves everybody very well. So I'm just not doing it that way. What I'm doing is I'm saying, wow, Old Testament prophecies, brethren, are fulfilled in an Old Testament's future, but in a New Testament's past. And what we're looking at in the book of Revelation is the fulfillment of those Old Testament passages. And there are just dozens of them here in Daniel and Revelation that are clearly, thanks to Jesus in Matthew 24, tied to a generation that is nearly 2,000 years in our past now, in the days of the abomination of desolation. That's what we're talking about. So what does the woman represent in Daniel, or Revelation rather, chapter 12? Brethren, I think that this woman, clothed with the sun, the moon under her feet, and her head with 12 stars, with child crying out in labor to give birth, is not Mary. That's just too narrow. It doesn't get the scope of what we're talking about here. What I think it represents is faithful saints of God, and as we'll see in a moment, Old Testament, followed then, but still also tied with and representing, this woman does, New Testament saints as well. She is faithful Israel, Old Testament or New. The people that serve God. This is God's plan unfolding, and by the use of that nation, there would come one, Jesus the Christ, who is the male child. But to just think in terms of Mary, it doesn't get it. We got the rest of her offspring. It's not the brothers and sisters of Jesus. It's the rest of the offspring who are faithful to the testimony. It's Christianity. So she represents something in a larger scale than just the one woman that was picked from among faithful Israel to actually give physical birth to our Messiah. So the child is Jesus. I doubt that there's a commentary on the planet that doesn't think so. I mean, truly, everybody gets this figure. Minor differences, Catholics go with Mary, you know, but still, everybody's seeing it. The dragon is identified as Satan. He wants to kill the child. Who did he use to do that? Herod the Great. It's clear as a bell. Everybody gets it. We all see it the same way. Minor differences, verse 4, for instance. Well, wait. Another sign appeared in heaven, a red dragon, 7 heads and 10 horns, on his head 7 diadems. We're going to get the 7 heads and 10 horns again later in the book. We'll come back to that. But I'm told who this is. It's Satan. It's the devil. But the 7 heads and the 10 horns represent physical kings and kingdoms. So we'll come back to that again. You can read my notes to see what I think here in chapter 12, and you'll have references to the future. We'll save that one for the future. It's the devil. And then there's aspects of him and how he works that's tied up in the particulars of the dragon. Then his tail swept away a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. We've talked about this before. Stars representing leaders, as they do in Daniel, people that are of great influence among the nations of the earth. Okay? Then we have verse 5. She gave birth to a son, a male child, who's to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. That's the end of the question marks about who this is. Jesus was prophesied that way in the Old Testament. It's Jesus. Now, by the way, just coincidental that Jerry, I couldn't believe it, but Jerry's been spending this month in Psalms 2 on the Lord's Supper. That's just so providential. So I don't have time for it. You write it down. I think I've got it in your notes, but yeah, under 12:5. But that string of verses, Acts 4, verses 23 through 28, which quotes from Psalm 2, verses 1 through 9, which is referenced in Daniel chapter 7, verses 13 and 14, it'll do you well to go read when you get home tonight. So go read those verses. I don't have time now. But read in order, Acts 4, verses 23 through 28, then go back and read most of Psalms 2, verses 1 through 9, then go read Daniel 7, verses 13 and 14. It's Jesus. But brethren, when was the child caught up to God and to his throne? Same way he was in Daniel 7. Jesus, in Acts 1, 9 through 11, went up to the Father to receive a kingdom. Or if you want, you can say, when he went into the grave, he presented his sacrifice before the Father. You can argue either way on that one, and I don't particularly care. I opt for, when I present it first, that it has to do with, Jesus returning to heaven in Acts chapter 1, verses 9 through 11. But, you know, I'm very close, and it isn't going to make a difference to us. It's Jesus going to receive the authority to reign over his kingdom where? On the earth. Down here. It's the start. It's the beginning. Now's the time. So, in verse 5, the Son is born. He's going to rule all the nations, not just Israel, with a rod of iron. Child's caught up to God and to his throne. The woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared by God so she might be nourished for our 1,260 days. Length, physical, actual length of the Roman siege. the Christians took Jesus' advice in Matthew 24, left the city, went to Pella out in Perea. Verse 7, there was war in heaven. Michael, he's in Daniel 10 as well as Daniel 12, and his angels waging war with the dragon and his angels wage war. We're looking behind the scenes into the spiritual realm. And they were not strong enough. There was no longer a place found for them in heaven. The great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who's called the devil and Satan, who deceived the whole world, thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. At verse 9, please get your pencil or pen, and in your Bible, do this, it's very important, very helpful. Write in the margin of your Bible at verse 9, Luke chapter 10, verses 17 through 20, while I read them to you. Luke 10, verses 17 through 20. And the 70 returned with joy, saying, Lord, even the demons are subject to us in your name. And he said to them, I was watching Satan fall from heaven like lightning. Behold, I've given you authority to tread upon serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing shall injure you. Nevertheless, do not rejoice in this, that the spirits are subject to you, but rejoice that your names are recorded in heaven. Sound like names written in a book maybe we might have read somewhere? Satan falling? Yes, Rachel.
Can you say that scripture again?
Luke chapter 10, verses 17 through 20. Okay, now back to Revelation and chapter 12. 10. I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now brethren, get the terminology. The first three letters of what the loud voice says matters to us because it's a time reference. And it's just like what you read in Daniel. Now, whatever's going on, it's at this time. Now, the salvation, you ask yourself, when did the salvation come? And the power, it's the word exousia, which means authority, as in all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go, therefore. That word. And the kingdom of our God. You ask yourself, when did the kingdom come? And the authority of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren has been thrown down, who accused them before our God day and night. And they overcame him, brethren. Now, and when and why, in verse 11, they overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb and because of the word of their testimony. They did not love their life even to death. Remember them in chapter 6, verses 9, 10, and 11, fifth seal. For this reason, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil has come down to you having great wrath, knowing that he has only a short time. It would be a separate study, and I haven't done it for you, but I highly recommend that you buy Art Ogden's commentary, The Avenging of the Apostles and Prophets. Maybe I'll get to it one of these days, but it's just one of the numerous things that I'm not taking time to go over with you. I think my case could be a lot stronger than the one I presented, you know, with studies like this helping to serve it. But the difference, brethren, in earth, and we think global planet, okay, and then sea, and we think Mediterranean, of Galilee, that kind of sea, you know, Pacific Ocean, we think like that. Don't think we should. Those that dwell on the earth, brethren, is a phrase you find many times in Revelation, and they're always being punished for their misbehavior. Those that dwell on the earth were the earthy, sensual, demonic peoples. They were the people that were given over to carnality and to sin. They are the people that are being punished. And then you got the sea. Now, just hit me, and so I don't know that I'll be able to find it for you immediately, but hold on a second. Turn to verse 15 of chapter 17. 15:17. We'll start in 17 first, verse 1. One of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and spoke to me, saying, come here, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who what? sits on many waters. Now, granted, it's not the word sea, but it sits on many waters. Now, skip down to verse 15. He said to me, the waters which you saw where the harlot sits are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. Here's another inspired interpretation for a symbol in the book of Revelation. This time, waters equals Gentiles. I'm suggesting that the word sea should be understood that way too. It's a synonym. Sea is nations, kingdoms, Gentiles. Those who dwell on the earth are the evil Jews that are being punished for rejecting their Messiah and for the blood of the apostles and prophets, Matthew 23 and 24. So, in verse 11, they overcame. Well, first, let me finish with verse 10. Salvation, power, kingdom, and authority. And I got that wrong. The power word is dynamis. The authority word is authority. The exousia word was the third of those. Or fourth, I guess it was. I swapped the words, but it's still there in the verse. Brethren, these are all things that happened back in the first century was the now when they start. That's not stuff that lies in our future. That stuff all became, you know, present. It was now back then. These events are happening back then. So then in 11, they overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb and because of the word of their testimony. They didn't love their life even to death. Immediately the saints were persecuted, first by the Jews, eventually by the Romans. Verse 12, for this reason, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil has come down to you having great wrath, knowing that he has only a short time. And when the dragon's side was thrown down to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. Sounds a lot like the shattering of the holy people back in the Old Testament, doesn't it, in Daniel? The dragon's side was thrown down to the earth. He persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. The two wings of the great eagle were given to the woman in order that she might fly to the wilderness to her place where she's nourished for time, times, and half a time from the presence of the serpent. Now, the more particulars of this are given in the last three verses. It's a strange thing. The serpent now pours out water like a river out of his mouth after the woman. Now, if water represents the Gentiles, that'd be an interesting thing to think about. And that then might escape, cause her to be, or excuse me, 15, river out of his mouth after the woman, so he might cause her to be swept away with the flood. Trying to kill the woman with a flood from the dragon of waters. And the earth helped the woman. And the earth opened its mouth and drank up the river, which the dragon poured out of his mouth. The earth swallowed, absorbed, consumed, took all of the waters. And that helps to spare the woman. It's helping the woman that the waters went there into the mouth of the earth and not sweeping away the woman. And the dragon was enraged with the woman and went off to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Jesus. Brother, I do not think that the devil is going to be waging war with you after you go to heaven. If this is all some kind of vision of something that lies in our future and the end of the planet, and we're going to be rescued and the 1260 is heaven or something, well, how does that work? Because then when do the rest of her offspring come? And how would Satan be persecuting them? This has to be while the earth is still here. It is a picture of faithful Israel, whose prophecies and faithful people, from whom came Jesus, the male child, the son of the king who would reign with a rod of iron. And then he goes to the Father. He gets the salvation, the power, the kingdom, and the authority 2,000 years ago. The woman, saints, faithful Israel, Old Testament Jews who had become Christians, fled the city, left town, and the Jews took the flood and were swept away. The wrath of Rome stayed there, concentrated there, destroyed them, their city, their temple, their religion, their genealogical records, the hope of ever resurrecting anything that is Jewish from the Old Testament.
This is a picture of God pulling back the curtain saying, wow. So down there on earth, you guys are going to see in this generation, and now soon when the book of Revelation is written, what Jesus said would happen.
And when all that's going on down there with you in those first 11 chapters, and I identified, thanks to Josephus' testimony, all the various events that surrounded the Roman invasion and Vespasian and son Titus and all of that. Okay? But back behind the scenes, there's Michael and war in heaven and their faithful Israel, you know, through the ages, and we've got the devil and all this, you know, taking place.
The grand scale of the things that we cannot see with our eyes, we are now having shown to us when we start to tell the same story over again in chapter 12 to the end of the book. Thank you.